I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. Tomorrow marks 1 year since an earthquake devastated Haiti. International donors have pledged billions of dollars, but reconstruction in Haiti has been painfully slow. 1 million people still live in tents in the capital, Port-au-Prince, and buildings such as the National Palace still lie in ruins. But as The World's Jeb Sharp reports, some neighborhoods are coming back to life.
This is one of the most uplifting places in Port-au-Prince right now, a fabrication yard where scores of workers are pounding nails, cutting plywood, loading trucks, creating the transitional shelters that bridge the gap between tents and permanent homes. Christian Oakes is construction manager for Catholic Relief Services in Haiti.
Transitional shelters are designed to last about 3 years. In many cases, they're better than what people often lived in before, and they're in all likelihood going to become somewhat permanent.
Picture the sort of shed you'd see at Home Depot. It's a plywood structure with a door and a tin roof.
It's a huge step up from a tent, but it's not ideal.
The idea is to get people out of tents and into these shelters, but it's not easy.
It's been a huge challenge. The original concept was to find big tracts of land and build shelters in, you know, kind of little Levitt towns, and to get people out of camps as quickly as possible. The concept was to build in as large a tract as possible.
It was a good theory, but it didn't work that well. Putting up shelters on empty land away from the city, detached from services, cut off from commerce, wasn't a great success. So Catholic Relief Services went back to focusing on the neighborhoods. This is the Odin neighborhood. It's in a ravine. The houses are nestled into the contours of the hillsides and stacked up higgledy-piggledy. Oakes and his colleagues couldn't imagine working here at first. It was so dense and the land was carved up in odd sizes and shapes. 60% of the houses were destroyed. The ravine was full of rubble. Cynthia Soli is a 25-year-old nursing student. She describes how after the earthquake, the survivors climbed out of the ravine and camped in a big yard. We woke up every day listening to the news, Soli says, hoping the president would say something, but he never did. Then, the owner of the land they were camped on gave them 1 week to get out. People were crying, Soli says. They couldn't eat. It was bad news. But it was also the moment that galvanized Soli and a few of her friends. They pooled their money for bus fare and began visiting anyone they could think of, NGOs, the mayor. Eventually, they were referred to Catholic Relief Services. When CRS's Benjamin Krause came to see the ravine, he thought there was no way his organization could help.
We took one look at this area, which was essentially completely destroyed, and the projects that we had been designing were not for an area like this. They were for an area with open space where we could legitimately build large numbers of shelters very quickly.
But the CRS staff were struck by how dedicated and organized Soli and her friends were, so they gave them picks, shovels, sledgehammers, and wheelbarrows to see what they could do.
You know, after just a couple of weeks, they had already cleared out, they'd already torn out several houses, and we frankly didn't believe them when they were telling us the amount of work they had done. And it wasn't until we actually came back and saw how far they had come so quickly that we really knew that we had something special here.
But Krause couldn't imagine getting the shelter kits with their unwieldy plywood panels down the narrow footpaths. There are no roads through the houses here. So CRS's head carpenter designed a way to break the panels into smaller pieces. It worked. Now the neighborhood is filling up with transitional shelters, and they are quickly being transformed into permanent homes. We pass one where two men are building a foundation around the bottom. Cynthia Soli's shelter was the first to go up one day back in June. It was a big day. Soli's home is right next to a church. It, too, was destroyed in the quake, but the congregation still gathers on the same site in a big tent. She says the singing is a huge help. It makes them all forget what happened. We visit for a while and then climb up the opposite side of the ravine. You couldn't get out this way after the earthquake because there was so much rubble. It's the most unfathomable piece of this whole story, how Soli and her neighbors managed to cart so much of the rubble up this hill, and then how they managed to carry the shelter kits back in. In one case, they even got a neighbor to shave a chunk off his own house so the plywood sheets could round a tight corner in the alley. At the top of the hill, there's more activity. Workers crank rock-crushing machines that literally turn earthquake rubble into sand and gravel that can be then used to make concrete floors. It's late afternoon now, and from up here you can look right over the top of this battered neighborhood to the bay and the mountains beyond the capital. Touring Port-au-Prince a year after the earthquake is a pretty dispiriting experience. But there are a few spots like this one where you can actually hang on to the idea and the promise of reconstruction. For the World, I'm Jeb Sharp, Port-au-Prince.
Jeb Sharp's video of those rubble crushing machines is at our website. That's theworld.org.